Amazon is hiring near you. Earn a competitive wage and start as soon as 7 days. No resume or experience required. Health and safety are a top priority with all of our roles and sites. Amazon is taking precautions in our buildings to keep people healthy. Go to amazon.com/apply. That's amazon.com/apply. Amazon is an equal opportunity employer.
On this episode of the iFilmmaker Podcast, we have Mr. Ceritelli back, and he's sharing his new docuseries for YouTube. Welcome back to another episode of the iFilmmaker Podcast. My name is Ariel Martinez. This is episode number 153. We have Mr. Ceritelli back, and he's sharing his experience shooting this docuseries with Lele Pons. She is a very, very big influencer on Instagram who started on Vine, transferred over to Instagram, and she's been killing it out there. And then he released and he shot this new docuseries on her and her real life and how that is. And one of the cool things about this piece is that I got to be a part of it. And Anthony called me up, and I was able to be a part of several of the shoots, and I got to meet Lele and see the behind the scenes. Obviously, this has been under wraps for quite some time, but we can now share about it. And what's cool about it is that we just found out that it was released on YouTube, or at least announced. So, you know, and this podcast could not have come in a better time. So we decided to talk about that experience and how it was shooting with a big time star and influencer, and kind of making this docuseries work out for YouTube. So we're discussing all of that. Obviously, we get into some gear talk, and yeah, we're taking your questions online as well. Speaking of which, we did do this live again on our YouTube channel. Make sure you go over and subscribe over to the iFilmmaker YouTube channel, and make sure you're following us on Instagram and all that stuff to get all that interaction. All the links that we're going to discuss on this episode, you can find them over at iFilmmakerPodcast.com. Click on the link for this episode, and you'll find all the links right there on the show notes. So with all that said, here is our podcast with Mr. Ceritelli. I find it awkward to kind of introduce you as a guest. Yes. Because you're basically family here, man.
Thanks, man. I love being on here. I do. I miss being on here as much as I was, you know, how it's picked up for me in good ways. So it's kind of been distracting, but no, I'm happy to be on here as much as I can, man.
And I love to see my friends and, you know, just people just doing great with their careers and whatnot. And obviously your career has taken off and you guys have been doing some fantastic, fantastic stuff. So congratulations. Thanks. On that.
Thank you. I'm sure we'll get into it a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I want to welcome everyone that's joining us live. We have a few people already coming on. We got Brandon Fountain, Joshua Martin. What's going on, buddy? Daka, Harold, KO8.
Joshua Martin. The usual suspects there up top.
Yeah. These are the usuals, man.
Man, I love it. What's up, man? Thank you guys for hanging around all the time.
That's always awesome. Dude, it's been insane. I don't even know where to begin. You're over in Jersey, of course.
Yep.
What's the vibe over there like?
I mean, I didn't know if I should wear my mask for this, for the podcast. You know, it's been crazy over here, man.
Yeah.
I personally, it freaked me out personally as well. I definitely have been pretty serious about the social distancing and staying at home and all those things. And I'm trying to break out of the shell of living a little bit in fear. I'm not so scared for myself. I'm scared of how this all shakes out if you give it to somebody or, you know, someone elderly that you might, you know, grandparents that you might care about or things like that. So I've been, you know, tiptoeing around to try to save people, essentially, I guess.
Right.
But, you know, I'm looking forward to it going away, man. This is abnormal, and it's not a comfortable way to live, that's for sure. So looking forward for things to turn back in the direction of normalcy. It would be nice.
Yeah, I mean, I think the same thing could be said with basically everywhere, and everyone going through a hard time. And I just, you know, obviously want to take this time and just want to remind everyone to stay safe out there. Listen to your local authorities and whatnot. But yeah, I don't want to. I feel like every single episode I've been doing this a lot where. Kind of sulking on the situation. I don't want to do that too long on this episode. I don't want to stay too long thinking about that. Everyone knows what's going on. So,
the only thing I've really done for that is, and you know this, I just put out a video. I wanted to nail something in the moment. I just thought it was relevant. One of my friends had written a column that he writes, and it was just so, it was too good to not do anything with. And I can't write like that. So I decided to make a piece on it, just a 5-minute piece on COVID and the situation, and a little hopeful and inspirational, hopefully. So something that's just out there for people to hopefully turn to now if they need some inspiration, and maybe one day look back on and just remember the crazy times. So
that was fantastic. Yeah, dude, that was a fantastic piece. I noticed, yeah, the writing was really, really well done.
Yeah, I can't write like that, so I had to.
Me neither. Me neither. I think at least personally, as a documentary filmmaker, I always hope to have someone like something like that to kind of start off a film with, because I'm just not a good writer myself. So it's always awkward to have that kind of good writing available when you need it for your film, you know. But that was obviously really well done. Where did you get all the footage? Did you shoot some of it?
It was an interesting way to approach it. I've never really done something like this with as much stock footage as I used. A lot of it was stock footage. The only things we shot, or that I shot, and I did, you know, solo. I don't have anyone here in the office or helping right now. Obviously we're kind of, everyone's staying away, but you know, I was able to send out the sound and send out the color, so people were able to kind of pitch in. But I did it mostly just shooting. I shot my kind of interview or look or portion, whatever you want to call that, and then the TV, there's a vintage TV in it that I put the actual footage on as well, and I shot that. So I just thought that was an interesting way to keep it a little more cinematic and moving along instead of just images or video, like stock footage the whole time. So I broke it up with those things, because I knew it would be a little bit of a longer piece to just hear someone talk and see only B-roll, like stock footage. So I broke it up with those things. That was kind of my format and structure there to help the story flow. And other than that, there was only one other shot in the whole thing that I got from somebody I know that he shot when he was in Nigeria. Other than that, it's all stock footage and news clips, which I pulled off the news clips I pulled off the internet, and I just cited the networks and stuff at the end. I don't know how legal or not legal that is, but I can't imagine someone's going to come after anyone in a situation like this when it's just, again, inspirational. I wasn't knocking anybody, so hopefully that's all clear and okay. But the stock footage is stuff I pay for subscription wise and I'm able to use, so that's
right.
That's all I want about it.
It wasn't, I mean, it's not like somebody paid you to do that. You're not receiving monetary compensation for that. So I think you should be fine in that arena.
Yeah.
Either way.
So that was my COVID contribution. I'm proud of it. And hopefully it goes away and that video is really not that relevant for too long, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. No. Hopefully, I mean, I think that's what we're all praying for, is that this whole thing goes away rather quickly. But I mean, aside from, and by the way, I'm going to put that link to that video. I noticed you uploaded it to, Instagram. Is that the only place that it's living on right now?
No, it's anywhere. I mean, it's on YouTube as well. Two main places, Instagram and YouTube. And then I'll link to that on Facebook and all that. So yeah. And I would say YouTube would be the best link to go watch if you want to take a look on your computer, full screen, all that stuff. But it's on IGTV as well.
It's definitely a good watch. I want to get into what you've been up to these days.
Yeah.
You've been busy, man. You've been busy. Do you care to give us a update on what you've been up to?
Absolutely. I mean, I texted you not too long ago. Timing for this worked out perfectly
because
we had spoke about doing this yesterday, and I wouldn't have this to talk about if we talked about this yesterday, if we got on this
right
on this podcast yesterday, because at 1 o'clock today, the trailer was dropped for a docuseries I've been working on since last January, so about a year and 3 months or so, and you've been a part of that for small parts of it, but a lot of it was shot in Miami, and when we were down there, we needed another shooter, and you were my guy, so we would always call you up, and so Ariel knows about this, and not too many people do, so
it's been on the hush.
It's been on the hush, but today it was announced. It's it's actually a YouTube original, so YouTube Originals is going to speak about it's a new series they call The Secret Life Of, and I don't know if they're going to continue with it. This is their first one, but this is The Secret Life of Lele Pons. And for those who don't know Lele Pons, she's an internet star, pretty much. She started on Vine. She's the most looped Vine woman of all time. And she transferred that right into Instagram and YouTube and made herself a career in as an influencer and creating content. But she suffers from some mental health issues. And those are the things we focused on and are kind of releasing to the world. These are not things people knew about. That was all under wraps, and she decided she wants to let it be known and tell her story and hopefully help out any of the other people that in the world that are struggling in the same arena that she is. So the trailer is out there. The trailer's out there, and it's going to start streaming on YouTube May 19th, and it's 5 episodes, and I think they're releasing them weekly. And I don't think you can binge them. I don't think you could even pay to binge them, so you got to watch weekly for 5 weeks. So I don't know if that's good or bad, but that's the deal.
And obviously the story is phenomenal. The story is it's definitely intriguing to follow this. What was that like? And what was it like kind of piecing this together? Who were you working with? I kind of want to kind of dissect the process, if you would. Yeah. And I'm sure that, I don't know if there are things that you cannot mention, obviously, just let me know. But what was that like working with her people, you working with your people, kind of piecing this ginormous jigsaw puzzle together? I mean, where did you begin?
This is the biggest project, I guess, magnitude wise, like as far as how many people are involved and how many moving parts there are that I've ever been involved in. So it was a learning process for me, but fairly simple on my end, as I came in as I just came in as a shooter at first. I was just kind of picking up shoots here and there through a friend that I had reconnected with that I went to college with. So she was working on it. She had worked on many projects of this nature for NFL Films and HBO and Showtime. She did the Hard Knocks series for NFL Films. She's done Floyd Mayweather. She's done stuff on Mayweather and Pacquiao. So she's done a lot of docuseries style work that she's won a lot of awards for. She actually has about 10 Emmys. So I was excited to work with her, and it's been great. And so I got to start shooting stuff for her. And as we start shooting more and more, I started editing random projects and doing stuff of my own as well. And then when the edit came time to edit for this project, the editor we had lined up actually couldn't do it because he had another project that fell around the same time. So she asked if we wanted to take it on or if I wanted to take it on as an editor. And although that's not something I keep learning more and more that I care to do long term. I do like certain parts of that process, but I don't like, this is intense. This is intense.
I bet.
And it's a lot of time, but I was super excited to do it. Again, a project of this nature, this size, and this, to put on my resume, and the story alone, like it was going to be a great project. I knew that. So of course I accepted it. And, so then I became the editor as well. So we, became shooting, editing, producing when she couldn't be there or someone couldn't be there. There's just so many things we ended up doing. It's just like in small productions, even though I wouldn't call this a large production by any means. It's not a Hollywood movie, but so this is still a small production by most standards. But, right. you know how we work sometimes when we work solo or just one, you and one other person. Like this is bigger than that, but this is still small enough where we were able to wear multiple hats. And get a lot of things done because, we wanted to stay in a certain budget as well. So that was interesting to figure all that out and still wear a lot of hats and be a part of a lot of the processes, which is great. Again, learning process for me, and just picking up tricks along the way. But so I was brought in by her for the most part. She's essentially, her company's Lobus Productions, and she's teamed up with a company in California called Shot Studios, who is the main production company, I guess, behind this. And they are also a kind of a talent management company of sorts. And they have a bunch of creators, including Lele Pons, under their umbrella. So they were kind of funding the story, and then they sold it to YouTube. So obviously now YouTube pays them, they pay me, and it just kind of goes down the line. But in the end, we all end up teaming up to get this done. You know, the money comes down from the top somehow, but we all do our jobs and we all get paid, and it's a big collaboration. So like, even when projects grow, it actually becomes more of a collaboration, I think, between companies and people, at least, you know. It's been fun to do.
One of the things that I really enjoyed working on this project, and you know, the little shoots that we did, was the fact that it wasn't such a large crew. And this is actually what I like about documentary filmmaking in the first place, is the fact that one person can get it done, you know. You just needed an extra hand or whatnot, and obviously it's easier with more people, but if you absolutely needed to, you can get everything done by yourself, you know, and that's what I love about documentary filmmaking myself. But yeah, like you said, it was awesome to have access to the person that's even funding this to begin with, you know, so it's all, you know, everyone has cohesive communication, and we're able to kind of talk about all the shots that we want to get, and you know, we're all on board with what's next to go. And I thought that that was really cool. Who was the person, I don't know if it was you or whatnot, but in terms of putting the storyline together, because personally I've never done a docuseries before. So what is that like, trying to, how do you decide which content goes on which episode? And you know, from what I understand, and from, you know, my experience watching docuseries, sometimes things are left out purposely in some episodes so that they could be revealed in later episodes. And that, to me, that personally, that would be new. How have you found that to be the case? And is it different? Was it kind of unsettling for you? Or I'm not sure how, if you understand what I'm trying to frame here.
It's no, I understand what you're saying. It's interesting because you shoot, and you do this, I mean, documentary work, you shoot, this happens in narratives too, but with this, you shoot so much more, obviously, than you use, right? But even so, you shoot more actual content than you use, right? In in a narrative film, you might shoot more because you're doing multiple takes, and maybe a scene or so gets left out when you decide it's not going to make the cut. But here, I mean, if this was compared to a movie, I bet we left 100 scenes out. You know, we've shot so much over the year that you have to figure out how to narrow that down into a story. So not only that, once you sell it, there then becomes guidelines. The episodes can't be longer than this, but they have to be longer than this. You need to include this, but maybe we can't include that. So like, that stuff happens too. I'm not saying all of those things did happen, but there are certain guidelines you have to live within even after you form the story and sell it, you know? So speaking on the process and like who makes those decisions, Alicia, my friend from Lobus, she was the director or creative director. She really formed the story. Shot Studios, who is Lele's management company and production company, they're big in on the creative process too, and very heavy on the input. And then I, as the editor, can sit here and cut scenes on my own as well and shape the story. And then we all kind of pull our heads together. And I would say, no matter what, if you had to do it in terms of like pecking order, I was on the bottom, because Alicia, the director, is going to have say over me, and then the people who are paying for it are going to have say over her, which is Shots. And then when you sell it to YouTube, unless they give you creative control, which they very much did, which was awesome, but they might have a couple things that are like, no, we can't do with this. We have to do away with this. So like, so now that they're paying for it, they're going to have the control, you know, in the end. So it's just, I mean, it's a matter of money really. And who, when it comes down to it, probably at any level, unless someone completely signs off on you having the creative control. But don't get me wrong. Look, we really shaped this thing. They didn't come in and like tear it apart by any means. We're actually very happy with, for me going into this process, I thought like, man, this could be intense once they get their hands on it and see it, what kind of changes we're going to have to make. And it wasn't as bad as I thought it would be. I thought things could get, you know, kind of reshaped completely, but yeah, it really wasn't. You know, we had good control over it, but that's kind of how it goes. I mean, it just goes right down the line, and hopefully you can maintain as much of the creative as possible.
Yeah. What was it like shopping around for different platforms? Because I know that, you know, that was also, I don't know if it was an issue, but I know it was a, you know, a concern. Obviously different platforms have different process and policies and whatnot and things to follow. And some of them are way more stringent than others. Mm-hmm. What was that like?
I didn't personally sell it. So that's kind of Shot Steal. They're the ones out shopping it. I was more on the physical production side, post-production side. I mean, I know a lot of what they're doing and what goes into it, but I wasn't personally out there, making the deal. So I don't know. I couldn't really answer that.
Oh, okay.
I couldn't really answer that question. So that was on them.
How much total footage did you record?
Oof, time-wise, I couldn't tell you, but it's about 30 terabytes of footage.
That's not
footage.
That much.
It's not too bad. I mean, nothing, it just keeps piling up. And I thought I'm rendering like the final, the master copies, and the masters are, they're about almost half hour episodes, and the master copies are anywhere from like 100 to 130 gigabytes. Each.
Wow.
And there's three masters per episode, five episodes, plus there's like down reses, and it probably ends up being 400 to 500 gigabytes per episode just for the final copy, like the master copies. So that's 2.5 terabytes just to finish it off. And we had like 4 terabytes left on one of the drives, and I was like, oh man, we're good, we're done shooting. And this stuff, like with all of the different cuts and renders that I have to make and sending them copies, and I'm not going to get rid of anything if we ever have to backtrack. I'm pushing the limits. I might have to get another drive to finish this thing off just for like a couple hundred gigabytes. Yeah. So it's about 30 terabytes for just the project alone. And,
wow.
If you're interested in how, we could talk a lot about the technical stuff at some point too, if you want.
Yeah.
I did so much of the post, you know.
Actually, that's a good segue. So I just want to welcome again everyone that has been joining us live. We got a cool comment from Driven Films saying, wow, I finally caught a live episode. What's up, guys? That's what he's writing. So we have Brandon Fountain online here asking, did you use software like Frame.io to quickly get eyes on the timeline to make sure what was shown was everyone was liking?
Yeah, we actually use Frame all the time. I use Frame in my company prior to this project as well. I suggested, I was like, guys, can we get on Frame.io because it's going to be the easiest way to communicate. They're in LA. My producer director's in New York. I'm here in Jersey. So like there was no way we could communicate any faster than that. I mean, Vimeo has those sort of options now. If you pay for a certain subscription, I just don't think it operates as smoothly. Frame is developed for that collaboration, whereas kind of Vimeo just added it.
Yeah,
so it's possible to work through there.
Tell me a little bit about the benefits of Frame.io.
I love Frame because you can add collaborators or team members, so your team members can see like anything on your platform, on your kind of in your bucket or in your folders. You can create collaborators who can only go on certain projects, so they can't see everything that's on there, which is important if you're running a company and you have things going on. You don't want everyone that's involved in something else seeing everything else.
Right.
What I love about it is you can integrate it right into Premiere. I don't do that. You can actually hit export, walk away. It'll then upload to Vimeo and alert the people on the other end that it's been uploaded.
That's Vimeo, you just, though, right?
No, I'm sorry. I meant Frame.
Okay.
I meant Frame. You can integrate it right into Premiere, and you can do things like that where as soon as you're done with the timeline, which I probably could do sometimes because it's like, all right, this is just, I just need to kick this out so they could take a look at it. Mm-hmm. I could hit export. It'll upload it on its own. It'll alert them via the app and an email. They can get on their phones or on the computer and type notes, obviously, where the, as soon as they type, that's where it like locks the time code to it. You can draw on it. It's just very simple. It's very simple and very easy for everyone to use and communicate and make all the notes and point things out. And like the time code is extremely helpful for the editor, that they like make a note exactly where the thing's happening that they're talking about. It's just a smooth process. It's pretty smooth. I mean, randomly there might be a glitch in the sense of someone like can't open it on their app for some reason and it goes to the folder instead of to the actual video, and then they got to find the video. That's a little bit of a pain, but I mean that's like the biggest problem, if anything.
So, yeah, I really don't usually work that way. Like, I don't work with a big team usually. It's usually myself, which is why, I mean, a software like Frame.io just, it would be overkill for me. Just because it's only me, and I only need my client to approve of it, and I don't have a team working with me. However, you know, Dropbox has always been my place. But I love that Dropbox has, and if you guys haven't, if you don't know this yet, Dropbox has implemented this feature now where I can send a link just normally. I have it integrated with my computer, so I just go through the Finder. I'll export directly to the folder that I need to, and I can just grab the link to that video, send that link directly, and directly from the Dropbox platform, my client can then go in, watch that video, and on the right side of the video, there's a place where you can write comments. And the moment that you pause the video, or I believe the way it works is when you start typing, it'll pause the video.
It stops it, yeah.
It stops it, timestamps it, and you write that note that you want to write. So in a way, it kind of works perfectly.
I think that's the same, that kind of format where it stops, you know, once you start typing, it stops it. That's how they think they're all working now, which is great.
I don't know if that's exactly how it works. I want to say it does. I haven't been on the typing
end
of that.
Frame, for sure.
Right. Yeah, I'm sure, because that's like the full purpose of it. But I know that there's that feature. My clients love it. It's so easy for me to follow.
I have a question
that
for you about that, because I've gotten stuff on Dropbox before, and the worst part about Dropbox to me is, one, they can download it. I hate that idea. And
no,
two,
you could deactivate that feature.
You can deactivate it. Okay.
Yeah.
Two, I hated it as a player. Like, it wasn't a good player. And like, we're sending off, you know, these things are half hour long, gigabytes in size, and they would get stuck watching it. So like, Frame is a sufficient. Oh, and let me tell you, the upload speeds, by the way, are incredible. I don't understand why it's better than incredible.
How does that? Like,
I mean, don't know how they do it. But it gets up there quick.
Well, do you think that it's compressing it and sending like a viewer friendly version of it, or?
I don't know how that would even be relevant for the upload, because no matter, even if they compress it, it still has to upload my full file, right? It has to pull in my full file, then compress it. But I'm saying, from the time I drop it in there to when it's like uploaded and it does its conversions, is so fast. It's the wildest thing, and I don't know the technology behind that, but it's faster than any other platform I upload to.
That's so interesting. Yeah. That's so interesting. I wonder how that works. I mean, it can't be faster than what your possible internet speed is.
No, not
at
all.
So that's why it leads me to believe that it's probably compressing the video, because I mean, that's the full purpose of the software, is to make everything flow efficiently.
Quickly, yeah, efficiently.
Maybe. Yeah.
But it pulls it in quick, and it's great.
Online, we're getting Brandon saying, I use it for my difficult clients and upcharge them. That's funny. I think he's talking about Dropbox, though.
Dropbox.
Oh, man. I got lucky with Dropbox.
I know
your
story.
Super lucky with Dropbox. And, I mean, I didn't know it back then, but now, oh, man. I've never thought about it, so I got lucky in that way. Yeah. So what surprises did you come across with a project like this? Has there been frustrations where, like, man, I thought this was over, but we have to keep pushing and editing?
Dude, I don't tweak it. So my one gripe with documentary filmmaking is, and this is tough because these are probably a lot of the good stories, is the never-ending they're never-ending stories. Like, we could keep going with this probably for 10 mm-hmm. years. Mm-hmm. So when does it end? When do you call it quits on making the film, like, or the series? What so something else, you're about done with a cut, and then all of a sudden something happens in their life and you go shoot it, and now you got to squeeze it in. What comes out, you know? Like, it is just a constant merry-go-round of, like, what are we using, what's important, what's going to make it. That part, to me, I don't love that part, but obviously it makes the story better.
Yeah.
So I'm not opposed to that, but I don't love that part of, like, the unfinished story of documentary filmmaking, because it's like they're never ending. Projects can literally be never ending.
Well, of course. And I was actually, I was a part of one that was like that, where the filmmakers were shooting. And the film's already out there, and it's not even a docuseries. It's a regular feature. But the filmmakers have been following this individual, Nora, for like 5 years. Mm-hmm. And she lives not far from me, which, you know, obviously kind of made perfect sense to just keep having me on board to just go shoot whenever anything pops up. But after like 5 years, then they, you know, decided, you know, they brought me on board like 2 years in. Then they decided, you know, we're going to have to stop this at some point, because they don't know where this is going. You know, they were hoping that they'd get some laws changed and things like that. But, you know, the fight continues, and it sucks to have a story like that without an ending. Mm-hmm. But I get it. I get it. Which is super interesting. Did you ever watch Tiger King?
Have you watched not it? The whole thing yet. Not the whole thing yet,
so,
but
I
did start it. So I started it, but it's just been so wrapped up in this. So now that this is finally coming to a close, I'll probably catch up on that.
Yeah, that's super, super interesting, man. And crazy, because some of that happened over here on my end.
I've actually been to one of the zoos that I heard was in it.
Oh, really?
I went. It was down in like Homestead area, or maybe not that far
down. Yeah.
But I went to see Limbani, the chimpanzee. We went to see him one time when I was down there. So I heard it was in it, and I don't know how much or how little, but so that makes me even more interested to watch it. I need to watch it, obviously. They're saying it's the, like, most successful documentary of all time at this point, because of
you think so?
I mean, that's stats-wise. I don't know that
stats-wise,
it's, like, best one or anything, but, like,
obviously it, everyone's watching it, but I still gotta admit,
seen it all?
I saw the whole thing. Yeah, I binged on it. It's 7 episodes. Mm-hmm. I think 7 episodes or 8, something like that. I saw it all in one day. I mean, it's easy now with, you know, everyone staying home. But rewatch it again. But I think making a murderer is better, in my opinion. In my opinion, because I don't know what it was, man. It was just, and okay, so let me put it this way. Making a murderer is better in that the storytelling was better, right? Okay. But Tiger King is better in the sense that the actual events that happened were just that astonishing, right? Yeah. So making a murderer, the filmmakers just did a phenomenal job piecing the story together in such a manner that at the end of every episode, it was like, what the heck? How are you going to leave me on this cliffhanger, you know? And they did the same thing in Tiger King, but they actually had, I don't feel like they worked too hard to get those events that left you on a cliffhanger. I think that just happened naturally. So I don't know. They're both so close.
So you think Tiger King, the story itself was just crazy enough where making a murderer, the filmmakers did a better job.
I think so.
Because but they're both good, you're saying.
Oh yeah, they're both phenomenal. And even the beginning of Tiger King, you hear the filmmakers say, like, we just stumbled across this crazy story with the tiger. Like, what's a tiger doing in Florida? and then everything he just stumbled across, you know, and it wasn't, to me, I think, and again, I don't want to take any credit away from anybody. I just think that, you know, Making a Murderer was much, and again, if I remember correctly, Making a Murderer was put together by like college filmmakers. Okay. That they started while they were in college, and they just recorded for a long period of time, man. A long period of time. And everything that, like, the way they just pieced the entire story together was just that good. And then Tiger King, you know, I don't know how, what was the span of that one? About two, three years?
I don't know.
That's my own humble opinion. I wonder what everyone else thinks about that, if they've seen Making a Murderer or just Tiger King altogether. Would love to get insight on that. Please leave your comments either on this video or on the show notes for this episode. Man, what quarantine life. You've been editing a lot. Is it mostly for this?
Mostly for this, finishing up any other things that are lingering. But I mean, other than that, obviously there's no shoots happening.
Yeah,
there's
no nothing.
Shoots happening. There's not much to edit. So, you know, at this point, working on what we can do when we get out of this mess, and trying to work on some spec stuff like that I could add to the reel. I saw you redid your reel itself, like doing things like that,
or
kind
yeah.
of things we're diving into, company assets, I like to call them, you know, even working on like capabilities decks that we can hand out to brands and companies if they ask, just getting those things to have on hand, working on those things in the downtime.
So I keep hearing a lot more and more people saying things will never be the same again. You know, things will never be the same again. Has that brought any perspective to you? Do you believe that? Do you think it's going to go back to normal?
I think it'll get there. I think coming out the gate, it's going to be extremely different on how we live our daily lives of, you know, whether it's wearing gloves or masks or staying away from each other or not going into places as much as you take out. I'm sure those type of things and being in tight spaces with a lot of people are going to probably, you know, take a little while to get back to normal. But I don't think we can predict if it'll never be the same, because if we find a cure of sorts or, you know, that we can take a shot and it's just like becomes another flu of sorts,
well,
things will get back to normal.
It essentially, you know, is going to be another flu. I know that they're working on a vaccine, but that's not going to be ready, not even this year. You know, it's
right.
Mostly,
I mean,
next year. But
that's the point. Like, even if it was next year, like, when that happens and people aren't scared of dying from this thing, and they're like, oh, no worries, I can go get a shot prior to the season, or I can go get a shot to get it fixed. If there's a fix for it, things will go back to normal.
So
I think,
okay, so yes, but I think what most people are referring to in the way that we do business, right?
Oh, okay.
Because here's the thing, this cannot happen again. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And I know I said I didn't want to talk about this, but I think it's interesting to talk about. You know, I don't want to talk about the sad part. I want to talk about the future, you know,
so that's
the reason I'm bringing it back up. This cannot happen again where, you know, the entire economy, all of us just don't work for what, 2 months, 3 months? Like, it's so uncertain. And I think that's the reason why people are going to take more precaution. People are going to take other approaches to the way they do business, to the way they have their income coming in, to even the kinds of jobs that they take. The first which jobs were the first ones to go? I think the restaurant business is horribly hurt right now. You know, air travel, anything like that. How do they recover? You know, things like that. And that in turn affects us kind of, because we got to travel sometimes. So are the prices going to go up? Are they going to go down? Mm-hmm. Are they going to be less flights? I think it's all a trickle down effect where it affects everyone. And that's what I think they're mostly referring to. Personally,
will all that get back the same? I don't know, man.
So that's what I mean. Like, I think that that's what I think they're referring to. And I think it's true. I think that people are not going to be as, I think they're going to put more eggs in different baskets, put it that way. Sure. Like, I think that they're going to try and take smarter approaches. It's going to be interesting to see how many businesses adapt new ways of doing business because of this? How many businesses stay under? And I mean big businesses, like.
Yeah. Well, think about even our business. Like, are you trying to think about things you can do differently? Because, like, yeah. What if we can't shoot for another 6 months?
Yeah.
You know?
Well, to be honest, I personally think, as freelancers, I think that we're good in the sense that we don't have to wait for one business to go back if we were, like, working 9-to-5s, you know? Right. And this might incentivize people to go full-time freelance because now, like, I'm already getting inquiries from some clients saying, hey, look, it looks like we're going to be going into production on this day, you know, and it's nice. Like a month and a half from now or like a month from now. And we're going to take measures to continue to, you know, keep social distancing and whatnot. And but you see, like, that's not my only client. I have other clients that are probably looking to do the same, and then we're back in action. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. As opposed to if you had a 9-to-5, it's not, you know, you have to wait for that one business to get back for you to go back to work, which sucks, man. It really does. And that's, you know, I guess you could add that to the cons section of freelancing or working a 9-to-5, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I couldn't tell you the answer, man. I've, you know, have these conversations with everyone and anyone, and I speculate differently every time I talk to someone new because you hear a new point and you're like, oh, yeah, good point. Like, that might happen. Yeah. It's going to be harder than I thought.
Look,
you're right. This is going to turn right around.
There is no right or wrong answer. There's really no right or wrong answers. Really, we have to wait and see. I'm just giving my own, I guess, opinion on what it might look like, but obviously don't take
I think you sound in pretty good, pretty reasonable. Like, those things could happen. Everything you just said.
I've just been thinking about it a lot. You've been working a lot. So I think that's what's going on.
I definitely have had some FOMO of not doing anything. You know, everyone like stopped doing everything. And right when that happened, I got the continuous like overload of this project, trying to wrap this thing up and deliver all the final deliverables.
Yeah.
Like, I've been so wrapped up in it. I haven't not done anything, which I'm not complaining about by any means, but I was seeing everyone like taking some time to themselves and, you know, binge watching something. I just never do that in general. Just not my lifestyle. And I like my work and I want to do a lot of work. So I'll choose work over doing that.
Same.
But then finally everybody does that and I'm like, this is my moment to do that. And I can't do it because I have so much work to do. It's hard to complain about that, but I definitely felt that. I was like, man, I want to sit on the couch a little bit.
So I definitely did that a couple for a couple days here and there. But I've been working on mostly getting the podcast back up and running, you know, contacting a bunch of different people to start, you know,
your set looks more great. Episodes.
Thanks, man. It took like 10, 12 total hours to put all these panels on, all the walls.
Well, it looks good.
It sounds so much better, man.
Just sounds nice.
Just walking in here, you could just feel all the vibration. Oh, man. Yeah. Sounds so good. And I'm sure that there's more I can do
behind me, and just to try to compete with you.
Looks good.
Yeah.
I think Brandon said it looked good.
Thanks, man.
Earlier,
yeah, I literally just threw a light above me and diffused it, and threw a light behind me, so just to give it some feel.
Hey, so let's get into some gear talk real quick.
Yeah.
Today or yesterday, Canon has announced some of the specs for the new Canon. EOS R5.
Yep. I keep getting text messages about it. I haven't read through the full specs of everything, but from what I've heard through chit chat with people, it seems crazy and impressive. I've also heard some downsides to the 8K RAW, that it just overheats like in 15 seconds. So I don't know what's true and what's not yet, but I mean, on paper, oh my gosh.
Dude, on paper, it sounds fantastic.
Yeah. So it's funny. I keep thinking about it, and I used to, and we had these conversations for a long time on all these podcasts about gear. And it's funny how my mentality has shifted a little bit. It's not that I don't like gear. I love gear. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But I, you know, through that time frame, I was still trying to get myself and my company to a place where we had what we needed to get jobs done the way I wanted to. And we really got to that place, and then the jobs start coming in, and I don't want to say I forgot about gear, but like, yeah, I had what I needed, so I didn't continue to research as hard of even the new stuff that came out. I'm like, doesn't matter. Like, the stuff I have is relevant and it's doing the job at a high level, so I don't need to spend more money. So like, this comes out and I'm so interested to look at it, but at the same time, like, I'm never going to buy this right now, but it's so cool. Like,
here's the secret to that, man. That's the best thing you can do, for sure.
What's that? Stay away.
Oh yeah. Of course. Yeah, if you keep thinking, more. Yeah, man, if you keep thinking about the gear, that's all your mind is going to be wrapped up on. You know, if you work, yeah, if you're thinking about your work, that's what you're going to be wrapped up on.
Yeah.
Now, here's,
it's a good thing.
It's not to say, I
mean, sometimes some of these things are just so much better than what we have, and like,
yeah,
you need to know about it.
Yeah, that's the thing. So that's what I'm saying. Like, it's not to say that forget about gear altogether and do with what you have forever. Right? Because I think that there is a danger to never adapting to new technology. Never, absolutely, you know, you might come to a time where you find out you're doing a lot more work than what you should be doing, you know?
Right.
Excuse me. So I mean, obviously I'm always keeping one eye on the newest and latest gear out there. But yeah, my mentality is completely different in the sense that I really don't need it, but I still want to know about it. You know,
yeah,
that's kind of where I'm at.
Well, at the very least, it's for content purposes.
Right. Right. I mean,
but it's also great to know this stuff.
Yeah, definitely.
As a filmmaker.
So this EOS R5 is very mind boggling just mm-hmm. because it's from Canon, and for Canon to give us a camera, the first ever mirrorless 4K 120 frames per second Canon.
4:2:2 10-bit.
That's insane. Now that I don't know if the 4K 120 is in 10-bit.
I think
it is. If it is, it's like,
let me
where are you guys coming from? It's like, huh?
How did this happen? Yeah, it's like such a step. It's a crazy step.
They were so far behind.
Like, how did that happen?
They were so far behind, and in just one release, they catch up and are in front of the pack again. I'm just intrigued like crazy. It's insane.
4K 120 422 10-bit Canon C-Log is what is a text message I received.
Uh-huh.
I mean, and this is somebody else in the industry that I would trust to tell me the right things.
Yeah, so I'm looking at the wording here, and I'm reading this off of techradar.com, okay? Mm-hmm. I'm looking at the video specs here, and in all it says, so the way it has it worded, it doesn't specifically say that the 120 is going to be in 10-bit, right? So mm-hmm. it says, I'm going to read this quote, that's not the whole video story, some new announcements at its virtual press conference in April revealed that the EOS R5 will also be able to shoot 4K at 120 frames, comma, for those looking for looking to shoot professional slow motion video, and both 8K and 4K in 422 10-bit. Now, I don't see that it tied that into the 120 officially. It could be. It's very possible.
Well, you know what's interesting about the way that works usually, right? So, like, let's talk about the FS5 for a second. In 4K, it shoots 8-bit. When you drop down to 1080, no matter what frame rate you're at, it shoots 10-bit, I believe.
Okay.
So if you drop down in resolution, somehow it's able to capture a higher bit rate, or it's able to capture in 10-bit instead of 8-bit. So I wonder if it's able to capture 422 10-bit in 8K, I wonder if the frame rate's even relevant. It should certainly be able to capture it in 4K no matter the frame rate.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's the case, but I'm just trying to compare it to something else I know.
Right, right.
Might be able to tell us.
It also says it's going to capture 8K uncropped raw at 30 frames per second.
Raw 8K.
I didn't read it here, but I'm almost certain that it's not going to do 120 frames raw.
Raw?
I cannot.
I doubt that.
I highly doubt that. But it's super intriguing though, man. Super, like, it's like a blindside kind of deal.
Yeah.
It's a blindside to Panasonic, to to Fujifilm, to Sony, to all these cameras that have been thriving.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's not bad for us, for the industry in general.
Like, oh, no,
now,
yeah.
Now what do these other companies do? Like, we're going to have so many more options. Yeah. Oh, man. Soon.
Yeah. What sucks is that NAB, were you planning on going to NAB this year?
I was in between, depending on where we would be with some of these projects, but I'd love to go whenever I can.
Oh, man. That one, that was devastating. That one was very devastating.
How do you feel about, I mean, look, I shoot with my A7S II quite often to complement the FS7 or the FS5 or whatever else we're using. Mm-hmm. I rarely use it as like our A-cam. And I've just gotten so, you have the FS7 now, and you know, like I've had that camera for 4 or 5 years and still so
good. It's a great camera.
Good. It's so good. I mean, it's just so functional. It's so versatile, you know, and it just has everything you need. It really does have everything you need in one package. Yeah. I know you can gripe about the color or the menus, like are pretty much the two thing that people can complain about. I've seen great images off that thing times.
I just saw a documentary. I just saw a documentary, and it's actually part of my last podcast called the Feature Documentary Filmmaking. And I had my friends Heber and Mars. They shot the fittest film. It's a feature-length documentary film. And they shot just about a lot of the stuff in red, but a lot of the stuff with the A7. I want to say the A7 III, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. Not the A7S II. I believe it's the A7 III. I'm not sure what, and I haven't seen the comparisons between those two. I'm not sure if it's a better sensor. I don't know what's going on there. But I think it has the better battery. That's one that I'm kind of lost on. But it all looks great, man. Even mixing and matching with the FS5, of course you know the difference. Like, you can see the difference. But it's not so different that it's distracting. Does that make sense? I'm only seeing it because I'm literally looking for it. And that's how I was kind of watching a film on my big TV. I was literally looking for the differences, so I was able to tell a little bit. But man, they were shooting a lot of the stuff on the red, and a lot of the stuff, I would even say most of the stuff on the Sony, which was beautiful.
We shot this whole doc on a Sony, and I don't know how much, like, anybody out there or yourself, like, how deep you get into color. I don't know it that well. I love the idea of color, and I wish I knew DaVinci better. And usually, you know, especially for our smaller stuff or branded stuff that we do that we turn around quickly, we do it all in-house to our liking, and we've never had any complaints or anything. Like, everything seems to be good and looks good. But I'll tell you what, man, when you send something out for color with people who know what they're doing, it is another world when it comes back. It's like, for this project, I had to do plenty of, like, quote unquote offline edits, right? So I did an offline color, offline sound that is like just to get it to the client, like, so they can see what's going on, but we don't want it to look flat or sound bad, right?
Yeah.
So you got to do like this, you know, offline pass of sorts. And I mean, I do the best I can with it. I'm not like just breezing through it so that it just looks okay. I'm just trying to give it as best a look as I can, but as quick as I can, right? So it's not like I don't care, but, you know, so I put some time into it, but not like, I don't know. I can only go so far. And then I send it out for color. It comes back, and it's just, I don't even understand how they got those colors and that look out of it. Like, I have no idea how they do it. Like, that's how much more detailed they can be and how much better they understand how to manipulate these files. Mm. So my point is, and I've always had this gripe in general, but now I understand even more how people complain about potential bad color out of a Sony.
Yeah.
One, if you know what you're you know how to shoot and you can balance your temperature and like expose and you do all that stuff correct, you can get a decent image to begin with. But then when it gets in someone's hands who really knows what they're doing with the color, it can look phenomenal. Like, phenomenal. Like, you would never know the difference. So for the people that think that has bad colors, I just think they don't know what they're doing on the back end, or possibly what they're doing shooting, to be honest with you.
Let me put it a different way. I think they're just not as good as a colorist, an official colorist.
I didn't know what I was doing with it. Me neither. I didn't know how bad I was until I saw that. That's what I'm saying. And I'm not saying people are bad. I'm not trying to like put people down. But you're putting it better. But like you don't understand how good it can be until someone who knows what they're doing gets their hands on it. Like it's wild how much better they are, and it's so intricate. It's really cool to see that. So like,
I mean, that's why
it's more of an inspirational thing. Like, hey, these cameras are plenty good. Like, you can get great stuff out of it. So if anything, if you have issues with it, learn how to color.
Yeah.
Like dive into that, because oh my gosh, you get some beautiful stuff, man.
We have a comment here from Room 9 Podcast saying color theory is something that he just started really digging into. It's an amazing art form. It really is. It's a career in and of itself.
Yeah.
Being a colorist, that's a full-on career, you know? Yeah. And
it's one of the things that, you know, we put on a lot of hats in general for the stuff. It's one of the things that's hard to just put a hat on for.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's
you can do it.
As much as I enjoy it,
certain level.
I cannot call myself a colorist. I love coloring different things. I love coloring, but I'm not a colorist.
Yeah, we could stylize it out of anything, right? But like true colorist?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Oh man. I love photography, but I'm not a photographer. You know? Right. I like taking pictures. It's a lot of fun. Yeah. I feel like it's super easy too. I don't want to insult photographer. Oh boy.
Good. Hopefully it's just filmmakers listening.
Bring on the photographers. Yeah. Oh man, I still mess with my friend telling him how easy photography is.
One frame's a lot easier than continuous frames, right?
Let's get into that.
They'll come at us.
Oh man. But yeah, man, I gotta tell you, so here's my, I guess, my gripe with smaller, like 8-bit color, right? And I think that this is what most people complain about. Although I'm not as good as your colorist, I'm not as good as the colorist that I would hire, obviously. Mm-hmm. But I can see the difference. Like, for example, I can at least, from one frame to the next, even different cameras, I can go ahead and mess with the colors enough to get them where I kind of want them to match, right? Mm-hmm. But I have been limited because I'm trying to match my FS7 with the color science of the Sony A6300 sometimes, mm-hmm. and it's just not getting me there. The reason it's for hard. That is because I don't have enough latitude to kind of push those skin tones to where I need them to be, the hue, the saturation, the contrast, things like that, because of the 8-bit. And I think that's what most people are.
Right.
I wouldn't say it's crap. Yeah, you don't realize until you see good color next to it.
You don't see good color next to it, or until you actually have those files to push. So, like, you know, when I started shooting on the FS7 and moving back towards these other cameras, like you're saying, the simplest way to put it is if you don't have this experience, is what the difference, even when we grade it ourselves, even though we might not be great colorists, even no matter the case, when you slide. Let's say in Lumetri, when you slide that highlight or shadow or black, or you can slide it literally probably 2 to 3 times as far to get the same amount of adjustment when you have 10 bits. So you have that's how much more space you have. I mean, if not more, like you have so much more room to work and like make these adjustments, and you just don't have it in 8-bit. You don't see that till you really start trying to match colors, like you're saying, between the two cameras. And it's like, it's just another world. And imagine like 12-bit and raw, like with these guys, what they can do when they know.
Oh man. When I mean, you shoot on red. I was mixing and matching my GH5 with red footage, which is not, you know, GH5 is really good. Yeah. But when I tried to bring back highlights, for example, you know, skies, the red was just so beautiful. Like, it was like editing a still raw photo. You know how much latitude you have on that.
Yeah.
It's, oh my gosh, could never even think about doing that, going that far with the GH5. Right. It's just, it's a whole nother level.
Yeah.
So yeah, I wouldn't say that the GH5 is bad. I would just say that the red is just that much better. Yeah. in terms of latitude.
Yeah.
Yeah. Raw images, when you're dealing with raw, when you're dealing with more latitude, more flexibility, it just makes it easier. And that's what a lot of people don't understand. They think that, you know, it's the color that comes from the camera is what they're judging. But we're talking about in post, when you are able to push an image, especially if you're mixing and matching cameras with different bit depth and whatnot. So, it's just a whole different ballgame, but you know, that's why people try to shoot as flat as possible so that, you know, they have all the flexibility in the world with regards to contrast and highlights and shadows and whatnot.
Yeah, because if you have a huge amount of contrast in the image to start, then you're already pushing towards the edges of where you can be. So if you start in the middle, I guess that's kind of a way to explain it for anyone listening that maybe doesn't understand that. You kind of want to just start, the flat would be like the middle of the image, right? And then you can push to each end.
Speaking of raw, in audio, now that I've kind of discovered 32-bit floats.
Love that video you put out, dude.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, that video on my Instagram got a lot of traction, but it was just, I couldn't not put that out there in the sense that I was just working on something real quick and I'm like, let me just show the peoples this, because I feel like it's a hidden gem. Even though it's been announced, people don't really understand what the heck it was. And
I mean, I didn't realize how much I actually record in 32-bit float already. So because like I started playing, I'm like, oh, wow, I could pull this over there and it works. Like,
it's virtually unclippable.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Virtually unclippable. Like you can try as much as you want to try and clip and lose some of that detail. And maybe at some point you'll reach there, but it's really hard. You know, and then the thing that blew my mind was when I was watching, what's his name? Is it Craig Light and Sound? He has a YouTube channel. I'm sorry, Curtis Judd. So Curtis Judd has a YouTube channel where he does a lot of lighting and sound, mostly sound.
He's good with sound.
Yeah, he's a very tall guy. I saw him at NAB. He's super tall. Like, man, I didn't think he was that tall. He's like 6'5". But anyways, he did his video is like 26 minutes long on the Zoom H F6, which is what convinced me to get it. This man, he did three samples, one that was normal in the middle, one that was fully, if you just look at it, the waves, it's fully clipped, 100% clipped. And then the other one was literally a line that is, you cannot see the line. You cannot see any of the waveforms, is that low.
Mm-hmm.
And he was able to make it so that the one that was fully clipped, he was able to bring everything back to how the normal recording is, right? Nothing clipped. It sounds perfect. And he was able to bring the one that you can't even see any waveforms and just continue to raise the gain, just continue to raise and raise and raise the gain all the way until he gets it to a normal level where the other two are. And it was just mind-blowing because it's not bringing any of the grain, any of the noise floor up either.
So it sounds perfect. I don't know how it technically works. So I'm assuming it's recording a raw type of sound. And what you see as a waveform is maybe just like what your output is on your preamp. Like that's just kind of what you're monitoring. You can adjust it afterwards.
Here's the thing, and it's taken me a little bit. I'm still not used to it because when I'm using it on set, when I'm using it for my projects, I hate that Zoom did it this way, but basically what my headphones are hearing is not what it's recording. Right. I'm hearing the regular levels, I guess. But what it's recording, it's a completely different sound, right? But honestly, I don't even have to monitor it because there is no clipping. And that's the reason, I guess, why they did that. I'm not sure why they did it that way. But, you know, and the dials don't work to change the levels, right? They might just work for your headphones, but it's not working for the recorded file of what you're getting.
But again, it doesn't matter because you could just leave it recording and you don't have to worry about clipping. It's a weird workflow. It's definitely taken me a little while to get used to it.
But it's nice you don't have to think about it, man. I hate thinking about sound while I'm trying to light and shoot and focus and frame.
It definitely is. Like that video that I was putting, it was my church doing a marriage conference. And I just left my Zoom recording the whole time during that worship session while they were singing. And obviously you saw that it was clipped like crazy. And that was the only thing. And I was able to bring that back. And, you know, I was able to raise the volumes on some other ends. And, you know, that's the purpose of that. So you don't have to think. I mean, that's my purpose. You know, that's how I'm going to use it because, you know, if you're running around by yourself, just clip on some lapels, leave it recording, put it in your bag. You're done. You know, you don't have to worry about levels. So that's it's very intriguing.
Yeah.
I love it. I love it. I love it.
That's awesome. I got to play with it more.
Yeah, man. But anyways, man, I think we're over an hour now, man. We could keep going.
The other thing, I've had a crazy week and a half. I didn't even know, again, that this was releasing today. The Lele Pons trailer is out. So that's really cool. YouTube originals. I did that COVID thing, which is nowhere like important, but that was just something I felt, you know, passionate about. And then last week, we've definitely talked about this in the past because we shot it probably like 2 years ago and finished up the post sometime like early last year. But my first feature, Double Belgian, is out as well on Amazon and Apple TV and Fandango.
Wow, is that new?
Double Belgian. It's not new in the sense of we filmed it.
I mean like the release, is that new that it just came out on
last week?
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so we had gotten distribution back in like November, December, and it just took a while, like, I don't know, for whatever reason that the process they go through and signing the contracts. I didn't really handle that portion of it. I was mostly like the physical and post-production. So it just got released last week. And we have an international agent. So hopefully we get some international distribution too, but it's released domestically. So like in a week and a half, I've had quite a, you know, thankfully nothing else is going on. I have some excitement. <You know, laughs> things getting out there to the world that have happened over the last like 2 years. It's crazy how these bigger projects take so much time.
But, that's insane. That's insane how
take a long time.
Yeah, after a while you're now finally seeing the effects of it, really. Because you haven't heard from them in a while, right?
No, man. I mean, it's just been sitting around waiting for that release. So yeah, it's crazy. These things, these big projects take a long time to produce. I kind of like the shorter form, quicker turnaround. I like putting stuff out there. So like waiting 2 years for that day is a long time. I'd rather, you know, I like awesome, doing man. a month or two. But
super happy for you, man. We gotta. I'm definitely gonna put those links over in the show notes for this episode. Make sure you go over to iFilmmakerPodcast.com. Check that out. We got a comment online from Mike Gallucci saying, "Damn, these guys' studios are sick."
Oh, he's just jealous.
Super funny, Mike. Oh man, dude, thanks so much for coming on. Obviously, we're gonna have you back on. You are in the iFilmmaker family, so anytime.
Yeah, we can dive into some of the like more technical stuff.
Oh yeah,
I definitely have seen and learned a lot of things over the last, you know, how this length of this project. So would love to talk about that and share the things I've learned because I don't even know where to start. You know,
it'd oh
be,
man,
be cool to share it.
No, absolutely, and I definitely want to get into that. And maybe the next episode we could dive in a little more into your other projects and even all of that. For all that. Sure. So thank you to everyone that joined us live. You guys have been fantastic. And Mr. Cerutelli, we'll see you on the next one.
See later. You soon.
So I hope you guys enjoyed that episode with Mr. Cerutelli. Just a reminder, we're putting all the links to everything that we spoke about on the show notes over at iFilmmakerPodcast.com. Click on the link to this episode, which is making docuseries for YouTube. And you can find all the links and that we discussed today on this episode. Also, remember, we are going live on YouTube. So make sure you're subscribed over at our YouTube page. Get involved in the conversation. And also follow us on social media. You got at Jersey Filmmaker for Mr. Cervitelli. Myself is Ariel Martinez Films, and the podcast is at iFilmmaker Podcast. So make sure you're following us, subscribe over on YouTube, and we'll see you on the next episode. Thank you guys for listening. This is iFilmmaker Podcast. My name is Ariel Martinez.
Amazon is hiring near you. Earn a competitive wage and start as soon as 7 days. No resume or experience required. Health and safety are a top priority with all of our roles and sites. Amazon is taking precautions in our buildings to keep people healthy. Go to amazon.com/apply. That's amazon.com/apply. Amazon is an equal opportunity employer.